Ringer Films and HBO's Jagged is the next installment of the Music Box series, taking you to 1995 when a 21-year-old Alanis Morissette burst onto the music scene. With never-before-seen archival material and an in-depth interview with Alanis herself, Jagged explores her beginnings as a young Canadian pop star, the rocky path she faced navigating the male-dominated music industry, and the glass ceiling she shattered on her journey to becoming the international icon and empowered artist she is today. Watch or stream Jagged on HBO or HBO Max this Thursday, November 18th.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln in the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates. Prestige TV Podcast. My name is Bill Simmons. I'm here with Joe House, taping this on a Monday morning after an old school Curb Your Enthusiasm episode. I think Larry was like, what lines can we cross this week? And he crossed some. It was done as artfully as always on this show. And we had some surprises. And I think start to finish, House, probably the best episode of the four so far, right?
So yes, definitely the best episode of the four because it was the biggest. It was the most epic. The lines that were crossed were by order of magnitude two or three times more powerful, more cringy, more awkward feeling. I had to watch it twice. The first time I watched it, I felt disoriented. Yeah. I really could not reconcile the conflicted feelings of Larry's interaction with the Klansman. It was just, it took a lot. I really like wasn't prepared for it. It was Sunday night, long day of football, and then Larry hits us over the head with an unbelievable Klansman relationship.
Yeah, and you know, I think this is the way he's dealing with all this stuff that's happened in the country the last 2 years. Like last year he had the, or maybe it was a year and a half ago, the MAGA hat episode, right?
Yes.
And then this year, it's always like he's dealing with it on these human interactions, and the elephant in the room is this thing that is usually polarizing and crazy and insane. And I don't think he ever did it more elaborately than with this Klansman farmer that I guess like the stretch would be, if you're Larry, you know, why would you even be like, hey, sorry, I ruined your robe. But he just sees everything so black and white where it's just like, oh, I've offended this person. Oh, I've done this injustice to this person. I must fix it. And that's who the character's been for 21 years, right?
Yes, yes. And that's precisely the point. Larry lives in a single orbit. It's Larry's orbit. And so Larry's code, Larry's approach to the world is, people come into his orbit. They've either curried favor with him. They've made a good impression on him. You know, they've had some kind of interaction with him where he's prepared to, you know, sort out staying on the correct side of karma, or on the other side of things in Larry's orbit. Somebody has committed an offense. And there's many offenses in this show this week, beginning and ending with the pirate's booty, where yeah, if an offense has been committed, he has a hard time, you know, letting it go and, you know, justice must be served.
Yeah, that's almost the point of the show, is that all of the offenses to him have the same calibration. Like to him, the pirate's booty is just as egregious as anything else that happens, you know, in his orbit. And I think the show also kind of comes from the standpoint of everybody is a bad person, right?
Well, so And on that point, like he says repeatedly, all my life, I always make the wrong decisions. My first instinct is always the wrong instinct. I have to trust my second instinct. And that's exactly right.
Yeah. And I think the optometry exam is kind of the proxy of this, right? He's just like, 1, 2, I literally can't see the difference. 1, 2, 3, 4. No, give me 4 again. Give me 3. Like, He can't see the difference between the 1 and the 2. I think that's why that was in there out of all the episodes. But the you know, you think like, who are the other people on this show? Like, is Jeff a good person? I would say like absolutely not, right?
Jeff is definitely a 2.
Yeah. I mean, Jeff had an abortion extortion plot 2 episodes ago. Is Susie a good person? Would you call her a good person?
I think more than anybody else, Susie is the moral compass of the show. Yes.
Think about how crazy that is.
That's right. Yes.
Right.
Susie and Cheryl, the 2 of them.
Yeah. And I think over and over again, we've seen Larry's way of getting in to the real life stuff is through that orbit you mentioned, where like the Don Jr. thing that was a recurring thing in the first 2 episodes. Like, he has fun with the Don Jr. thing, but ultimately, like, you can kind of see through what he's trying to say. The biggest surprise on this show was we had Kaley Cuoco.
Yeah.
I never know how to pronounce her name.
I'm going to botch it as well. I've already botched the name of our this week's producer, our Ringer producer, Stefan. I already messed up his name, so I don't want to try names.
Wow, you were reading on the Zoom.
I was reading on the Zoom. Kaley Cuoco, that's what I say. I don't know if that's right or not.
Cuoco?
God, who knows? Who knows?
Well, she's a great actress. I like that HBO show she was on.
Yeah.
I never
watched. Flight Attendant.
I remember she was pretty good on that John Ritter show, which I had seen a few episodes of, but she's always good.
Yeah.
And she was really good as the eye doctor and went toe-to-toe with Larry, which I loved. But
I feel like there was a version of her because she's played a lot of idiosyncratic kind of characters. Well, idiosyncratic's the wrong word. I felt like we got a dose of the real Kaylee, which is part of the charm with everybody. Obviously, it's a highly stylized, highly hilarious version of all of these cameos that come in. But there's a kernel of truth there. I mean, yeah. And we'll get to the Woody one. There's a kernel of truth that resonates that makes me appreciate it. I feel like we got a tiny bit of the real Kaylee.
Yeah, well, they take the real life person, they shtick it up, right? Because they do the same thing with Woody Harrelson, who was our other
just
guest.
Wonderful.
Kind of unbelievable. I'm pretty sure Woody's never been on this show before. I don't know what took 21 years, but he was Woody Harrelson. And
the episode begins with him receiving an Oscar and doing the thing that has become a little cottage industry on these award shows of, you know, the actors or actresses.
Lecturing.
Yes, giving out, you know, the grandest of life advice and you know, trying to right all of society's wrongs in a single award show speech. And it's really brilliant the way that Jeff and Larry are together, like looking at each other. You know, it's like all of us, the experience of all of us. So what a great way to start off the show.
Yeah, and Larry says, if I win, I'll go, I'd like to thank the Academy. Don't allow babies in planes. Good night. I fucking love that so much.
Good.
That's Larry's cause, is don't allow babies on planes.
Well, great, he's got a cause.
Great cause, by the way.
He's got a great cause.
And look, you and I have both done it. We've both brought babies on planes.
Yes.
And we've had the hatred stared through the back of our heads for an entire flight cross country. And if I had to do it over again, I don't know if I would do it.
It's hard. It's a tough one.
Well, my whole thing is one of these airlines should just be have baby flights where it's like, this is the flight you bring your baby on.
Well, I mean, you know, the airline industry has a lot of issues.
I guess they have more issues than that.
At whatever point in time we get back to full capacity, maybe the baby flight will catch. That's a half-baked idea. You got to need to talk about that with Kevin Wilds.
Baby airlines?
Baby airlines.
Like baby
Kevin
Delta?
Wilds. You need to spitball this with Kevin Wilds.
Yeah, like bigger seats to take account of the baby that you have to carry in the flight.
Well,
yeah,
the baby seat.
Yeah.
You need to really like have it click in. You need click ins.
I'm going to talk to Wilds and see if Baby Delta is a possibility for us. so the biggest surprise was Kaylee Cuoco. Cuoco.
Yeah.
The five stories we were juggling on this episode. Larry decides he needs Woody Harrelson on his show, Young Larry. It's just so funny. And Woody comes over and there's some cream shaming, which leads to Larry needs a cow to impress Woody Harrelson. So that's one piece. Second piece, Larry loses a bet playing golf with the rabbi. Now he has to go to temple. Third piece, Leon has been hiding his love for watermelon, which we'll get into in a second. And the watermelon becomes a recurring theme throughout the episode. Fourth piece, Larry going to the eye doctor and getting his eyes blurred. And then the fifth piece is this hate rally side that I had no idea where they were going with. And then, of course, it ends up with Larry somehow making a connection with a terrible person named Joe, who you know is going to rear his ugly head at some point.
Klansman Joe.
Klansman Joe.
Klansman Joe.
So that's a lot.
It's a lot. About,
usually they have like maybe four of these 40-minute episodes. They have five, but there's a lot going on.
Well, they're big. They're big in scale. This is the thing. I want to take you down a 45-second rabbit hole, if you'll permit me to.
Yeah.
Why did you dislike episode 3 sufficiently for us to just, you know, go over it? What was it about episode 3 that made you, you know, because we didn't do a show last week on the mini bar, and yeah, and you didn't like it. It felt flat to you. Why is that?
I thought it was too long. Okay. I thought it was a 30-minute episode stretched into 40 minutes, and really only had one thing that I thought was smart and funny, which was the middle, the concept of the middle.
Yeah, the middle was terrific.
Yeah, the whole concept of if you have like 8 people, 10 people at a dinner table, at some point somebody's got to be Steve Nash in the middle of the dinner, kind of carrying it.
Yes, yes.
And I thought that was good, but for the most part, it just felt like we could skip that one.
Okay.
This one to me was unskippable.
That's right. This is why I asked the question, because last week felt like we were just matriculating the ball down the field a little bit. We did get introduced to Freddie Funkhauser. And the Mattress King, which is wonderful. And I'm so thrilled that
reintroduced.
Yeah, reintroduced. Right. Yeah. I just mean him as a recurring guy in this season, it feels like, which is spectacular.
Yeah.
And a tiny cameo from Patton Oswalt, which is fine, and hot dog eating. Yes. Just matriculating the ball down the field, though. This one had big stuff. To me, an abrupt departure from the first three episodes because of its ambition.
Yeah, and the ambition was, we're going to cross some lines and you guys are going to trust us. We're going to hit some themes that maybe in 2021 are going to be a high degree of difficulty, but trust us because we have the best people. The watermelon stuff, I mean, that was some of Leon's funniest stuff that he's done on any season. I think Leon has been unbelievable this season. This has been my favorite JB Smoove season of all the seasons.
It was an amazing acting performance by Leon. What an actor JB Smoove is. I really believed it was palpable how conflicted he felt about his relationship with watermelon. Yeah. It really resonated. The scurrying away, the watermelon in the garbage can, him not making eye contact with Larry, him trying, like, you know, what the fuck's going on with you? You know, trying to, like, deflect, and then immediately confessing his complicated relationship with watermelon. It just was really powerful to me. I don't know why.
Yeah, I was Googling it last night because I was so interested in how they came up with the story and who came up with it and how they decided to go there. And it was just, I don't think you can do it without JB Smoove. I was trying to think of other actors, because you would have to have like 4 to 5 seasons of equity with the character, right?
Yes, that's the key. Yes.
You have to have a ton of equity with the show. This isn't something you could do in the first season of anything. But in this show, with all the stuff they've done, and then it really pays off with the grocery store scene later. When Larry, what did he buy? Gefilte fish?
And
it becomes this like... This whole, it's like a food stereotyping plot that I wasn't prepared for.
this is what I mean. It knocked my block off a little bit. I felt a little, because I didn't expect an epic grocery store scene. I mean, it begins with the poor cashier, young lady, clearly right. A young lady just trying to make small talk. You know, what do you got planned for later today? I'm going to get my leg amputated. Oh, good luck with that, she says. So good. And then we end up with you know, a sermon. We end up with he interfaces with other customers. He buys a watermelon for another African-American customer in the thing. And he really tries to normalize food stereotypes in one fell swoop.
I don't know how they pulled it off. And this show has pulled off. You think back to the first few seasons. They did an incest survivor episode. They did, you know, like the Tourette chef, who also wrote down a lottery number on his wrist and made Larry and Susie think he was a Holocaust survivor. Like, you think, like, this show has crossed more lines than easily any show, I think, ever that's been popular.
Yes.
And they just have figured out over and over a way to pull that Palestinian chicken.
Palestinian chicken's an all-timer. We should do that on you know, one of the archive shows.
The terrorist? The terrorist plot where Larry's only telling certain people that they should escape LA. So they've gone there over and over again, all over the place. And this one was like an old school, you know, complicated theme that they were able to pay off. And, you know, it felt authentic to Leon, and it was just, it was really solid.
Because, really any one of the themes would have been enough to take on in one show, right?
Right. Well, we also had the temple theme about how Larry hates going to temple and going into that whole world, which I know you love because Larry got to play golf. You love when Curb Your Enthusiasm's on a golf course. That's when you're at your peak. And
I really
got to watch a rabbi make a long putt. It was just perfect for you.
I just want to say that scene was absolutely pitch perfect. It is it's so apparent that Larry plays tons of golf, is a degenerate golfer and a degenerate gambler. That's how it sounds when you're on a golf course on a green like that, talking shit to people and gambling for stuff that you think is absurd. I'll get a breast implant and right. I'll go to temple. Yes.
Well, the guy hits the putt. And what I loved about it was so golf authentic, because the putt's like has gone 2 feet. It's like a 35-foot putt. It's gone 2 feet. And you hear Larry go, no, no. Like he kind of knew immediately it was going in.
He had a good roll on it.
So I love that. I actually enjoyed the rabbi. I thought he was good.
Great job by the rabbi.
Then we have the eye doctor thing, which taps into, you know, you go to the eye doctor, right? Some people don't go that often.
It's been a while. It's been a while for me.
Well, you have good eyes.
Decent. I'm only in readers now. I only need readers as a middle age.
I have horrific eyesight, as you know.
Yeah.
You've seen me with my big Coke bottle glasses. So I have to go a lot. And I had, in 2016... when I hadn't gone in like a year or two, and when you get older, your eyesight actually starts getting better.
Mm.
And I started getting these huge headaches. It was when I was doing the HBO show. I was getting these huge headaches, and I thought it was either stress or like a brain tumor. And I was like, literally couldn't see. And I was like, am I so stressed out? I can't see. And it was my eyesight had gotten better. My contacts were so strong, they were like frying my brain.
Oh, wow.
So now I go, because I think when people have terrible eyesight, the eyesight can actually improve sometimes as you get older.
Okay.
It goes the other way. So I go every year, and the stuff they put in to dilate your pupils, like that's a real thing. Like I've tried to drive home a couple times with that where I just shouldn't have.
You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah, I know.
It's supposed to be a long time. It's not just a half hour. It's like hours.
I had one time where they dilated my pupils, and then I had to sit in the waiting room. And I can't see anyway without my glasses, but especially it's all blurry. And I'm in the waiting room, and sitting two seats away from me was Elgin Baylor, who I knew because I had met a few times.
I would say you knew him. You murdered the poor guy about 500 times.
We came around because I wrote that big piece after he got fired from the Clippers.
Okay, good.
I was like the big Elgin advocate for what an incredible player and what
this literally sounds like it could be one of the plot lines in Curb. Yes.
So I knew him and he liked me because I had really pushed on like how important he was in the 60s with black players and stuff like that. And I'm talking to him about basketball for 20 minutes with dilated pupils. I can't see him. And he's waiting for an appointment. So I was
did he recognize you and say, hey, Bill, it's Elgin?
Yeah, no, I was like, hey, Elgin, Bill Simmons.
Oh, you
could
see him. You could see him. Okay.
Well, he's six. He's still 6 foot six.
He's a giant man. That's right. That's right. I mean, the same way Larry could see the Pirates booty.
Right. So anyway, that resonated with me. And then they didn't really go into the whole hate rally thing, but they had the comeuppance of Susie ends up, I'll make the guy a robe. And then
I feel like they did go into it. You don't think they went in? They went into it.
Well, I mean, honestly, the hate rally thing could have been the focal point of an entire episode.
I'm glad it wasn't.
It was one of five things. Yeah.
It was uncomfortable.
Susie wins. Susie ends up getting the guy in the end.
Yeah.
Best scenes, the first scene with Leon where he's throws away the watermelon and then they talk it out was great. The Woody cream shaming.
Spectacular.
I got to say, I've never been cream shamed. Have you?
No, it's a ridiculous thing. It's completely made up, isn't it?
I love half and half. So I would take that really personally.
Well, that's a great point. You know, I drink my coffee black. I don't like stuff in it. So that's probably, I would avoid cream shaming. If I was going to do anything, it wouldn't be dairy anyways. I'd do like oat milk or something.
The grocery store scene was incredible. The farm, I think, was my favorite scene just because the guy, it's going great with Woody. They're almost out of there. And then Joe the Klansman, they're talking about the apples and he does the joke, I won't let the Jew charge you. And Woody's like, does he talk to you? Does he talk to you like that? Larry goes, I just call him a racist cocksucker. And they all laugh.
Yeah.
That whole scene was hilarious.
Joe loved it. I actually
think it was ad lib because I noticed this. I noticed this when I did the podcast with Larry 9 years ago. When he actually really laughs, his bottom jaw goes up and down. And on the show, you never see him really laugh because when he's like really actually laughing, his bottom jaw just goes up and down, almost like a bobblehead. And I think they ad libbed that whole thing and that really made him laugh was my takeaway.
Well, part of the thing that was complicated for me watching that episode, and I watched it twice, I watched it once last night and again this morning, is the relatability of Joe. Joe going along with Larry on the joke, not the joke, on the ploy
but
to trick
Woody.
But
this has been the show for 21 years.
I know.
Like taking
I'm
these
just
terrible characters and Larry somehow clicks with them on some surface level. It's
very different from what the first three episodes contained. I just wasn't ready for it. I had to it really had to hit my Curb reset button.
Well, I'll tell you, Larry's one of the only people that actually gets comedy leeway with this stuff. I was trying to think how many other people out there could even attempt to do an episode like this, where people would just be mad at them immediately, you know? And with Larry, it's like, I think some people have just hit that point where they've just built the equity with the audience. You know, I don't remember any episode that he's done that really enraged people and caused like a huge backlash. Do you?
No, you're right.
People kind of get the show.
Yeah, right. If you're watching the show, then you know what's going on. You've talked about it a couple times. You're right that the show has built up a kind of equity, a kind of trust where, you know, ultimately this character that we've known for 21 years is going to deliver some sideways take on a crucially important kind of thing that, you know, it's satisfactory. Blowing the shofar in the masterful way that he did and waking up all of Los Angeles apparently. Right. To the Klansman's attack,
right?
A perfect cherry on top.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately it pays off because Klansman Joe is a lunatic who comes to his house and is going to kill him. And you don't leave that episode going, I like Klansman Joe. I thought he had some good points. That does not happen.
No.
The last scene, which was so funny, he rear ends somebody because he can't see, and it in the driver ID, you see the driver's ID. And it's Mary Ferguson, and it's that, it's one of those, you just know what he's going to do because you know
it's
Larry.
It's so masterful.
Great stuff. And of course,
yeah.
And of course it gets screwed up because he brings Mary Ferguson back to his house and J.B. Smoove is having what he calls a watermelon orgy, and that was it. And Mary, so now we've lost three Mary Fergusons.
I love that how quickly they dispense with the failed attempt to make the connection with this Mary Ferguson.
Yeah, that's it. She's gone out immediately.
And then Larry's like, well, can I come have some? And Leon's immediately, come get some of this sweet meat. It just fucking killed me. Come get some of this sweet meat. And there's like five watermelons on the table.
So funny bits, we have just like little bits that were clearly written in a notebook at some point. The Academy speeches, they hit that. Cream shaming. I don't even know if that's a thing. The optometry, what it's like when you're in the chair and they're asking you to pick between the numbers. I always, my self-esteem always goes down in the optometry chair. I'm always
Why?
Like, one, three, four, did I make the right call? I'm like doubting myself the whole time.
I don't understand why. One looks better than the other, doesn't it?
Usually, but sometimes I don't know if I made the right choice. I'm like,
it's your choice. It's your eyes.
I know, but I don't know if I don't trust my eyes. So you have that. You have the whole concept of dropping a morsel of food and not picking it up, which in Larry's world is like a more egregious sin than just about anything else we saw in this episode.
Equally egregious to being a member of the clan.
We had the concept of a watermelon orgy. And then we had the temple horn, which I was not familiar with, but paid off in the end. He was able to pull off a beautiful temple horn.
Masterful so far.
At the perfect time. I thought start to finish, this was the most old school curb that we've had.
What is interesting to me, I agree absolutely with that assessment. The theme of the thread of the show has been, you know, the young Larry, and it was a perfect vehicle for Woody, but that was really it. No Maria Sophia in this one.
Yeah,
nothing.
Thank God.
No heavy Hulu. That's another thing we got from episode 3 that was a good time. Hulu and the Jewish guy. We're going to have to revisit episode 3. We got stage 4 wisdom out of episode 3. I really feel like you're not giving
to watch again.
Episode 3 enough credit.
I might have given it a short shrift.
But in any event, yes, we're in alignment on this episode being, you know, a step above sort of where we've been. And that's not to demean where we've been.
I was thinking of the actor who played Klansman Joe.
Yes.
Where the guy in real life and they're like, hey, I got a gig. Oh, you did Curb? You got the Curb? He's like, yeah. Yeah, so looks like I'm going to play a guy named Klansman Joe. Like, that's a tough beat for that guy. Like, out of all the parts you could have had.
What about all the actors at the rally?
Oh, man.
We will not be replaced. They all have to, like, mimic that. They have to show up in the Klansman outfits. Like, what the fuck?
Larry, I don't know what goes on in that dude's brain. I think MVP of the episode, I think J.B. Smoove wins again. I think this is at least his second MVP of the first 4 episodes, right?
Wow. It was a very strong Woody for me. I have to say, I love the J.B. Smoove. I love the vulnerability of J.B. in this one. I love Leon's vulnerability with the watermelon and how he let Larry, you know, bring him to the store. And, you know, there was an arc to that whole thing. But I just felt like it was a powerhouse Woody.
What a career that guy's had, by the way. I mean,
you need to get him on the pod.
He was on Cheers in like 1986. Woody's been in our life for 35 years.
Yep.
And he's been in Oscar movies and classic sports movies. I think he's one of the best basketball players we've ever had in a sports movie. Just good stuff all the way around. All right. The Prestige Pod. We're coming back. I think there's going to be some Yellowstone on the pod this week. I think we have 2 successions coming. And we'll see what else. But House, this was a pleasure. This podcast was produced by Stefan Anderson. And I think we're doing 5 this week. So stay tuned. Don't forget about every single album as well. If you love pop culture, our guy, Nathan Hubbard, your co-host on Fairway Rolling, breaking down for 2 hours, he broke down the Taylor Swift new album, 30 songs, House.
I hope you had time to watch some golf. I mean, I watched Taylor Swift do a 10-minute song on Saturday Night Live on Saturday.
Yeah, that was the song. That's the song.
She should really get over Jake Gyllenhaal. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, fair point. We'll leave you on that note. We'll see you on the Prestige TV Pod tomorrow.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.